Oh, hey, welcome back to the Yahoo Fantasy Baseball Podcast. I am not your usual host. Heck no, Scott Pianowski is vacationing right at this moment. So it's merely me, Andy Behrens, filling in for Scott. Don't worry, he will be back very soon. Hopefully refreshed, recharged. Nothing more dangerous in the fantasy industry than a recharged Scott Pianowski. I am joined today by, I'm excited about this. I'm joined today by, now this is not Dalton Del Don, don't worry. This is a more respectable Don. This is B Don. I'm joined by Brandon Myers. You may know him at Razball, at Raz B Don on Twitter. How you doing, man?
Oh, I'm doing great. I mean, that's a hell of an intro. You know, to be said more respectable than Dalton Del Don, I don't know if I'm quite there. I mean, Razball also has some other things associated with it, like, you know, random penis jokes and some crude language at times. So respectful may not be the right term, but I appreciate the intro there. Gray's let me out of my hamster wheel for the day, so that's nice to record. Even put me in this nice like bedroom back here that you see to make it look like I have a house that I live in. Not just,
oh,
like,
so you're at the Razball compound.
Oh, yeah. We're just stuck in little cages behind Gray's house. Like the dog, we get to watch the dog play catch with Gray, and that's about as much fun as we have in any day.
You cannot go outside yourselves, but you can watch Gray go outside.
There's a really nice fountain in the front when you walk in, and you think you're going to get a nice office, and then you know, we just get locked up out back, or Donkey Teeth. I think he got moved to the basement. Gray wanted him in close proximity, so he's down there in the basement now.
Well, I'm excited to have you guys on. I've been a fan of the site for a long time, and really happy to be joined by you today. Hopefully, we can get a few additional Razball writers and analysts on here. Maybe on more pods than this one too. So this should really be a treat. You are joining us at just a totally bizarre time. Just an absolutely bizarre time. Everything is everything feels very tenuous across the sports landscape right now. And certainly in Major League Baseball, where camps are ramping up, but we have a bunch of positive COVID tests. We almost shouldn't talk specific players, I feel, because like the news changes like minute to minute, right? It's we knew about Charlie Blackmon, Freddie Freeman is fighting a case, Tommy Pham, DJ LeMahieu, Miguel Sano, who am I missing? Sal Perez, like a ton of Phillies, Joey Gallo today. So we have a bunch of those cases. Plus we have players who are either sitting out or they're kind of on the fence about whether they should sit out the season. I suppose most notably for fantasy, this is David Price. There are some implications there. We heard about Nick Markakis recently. We have at least a level of concern with Mike Trout, whose wife, I believe, is due to have a baby in August. So let me just get general thoughts here on how you are treating any of the, I guess, first of all, the players who have tested positive, like either in your ranks or your projections. And then let's have a secondary conversation about, like, seems silly, but like where you're comfortable taking Mike Trout right now. I mean, that's a ridiculous question at almost any time, but it's not totally ridiculous right at this moment.
Right. Before this year, it was like, okay, he's 1 through 3, and if you're 3, you have to explain why. And now we're to a point where it's beyond even that question. So I understand where you're coming from there. As far as the guys who have tested positive for COVID, we have some information from social media, from news outlets, from, you know, reporters, coaches, to severity for some of these guys. So, like, apparently Freddie Freeman's is on maybe not the full spectrum of he's got everything that you could possibly have, but it's only, you know, he has symptoms and they're affecting him. And people who know him say it's bad. Like he apparently doesn't get sick and he just sounds like he's on like his deathbed. But if you've, you know, been around guys who are sick, we sound like we're on the deathbed when we are sick. So if he never does get sick, maybe he's just experiencing it for the first time in a while. No, I don't mean to make light. I mean, hopefully Freddie's fine and he's good moving forward. But then even on the same team, you have like Tuki Toussaint, Will Smith, who apparently are asymptomatic and have caught it. And so I think for the people that we have information for, I think the ones who have caught it asymptomatic, and then I guess that basically means we're going to get them some point back in the season, and I don't expect them to go away. Whereas the people we don't know about, the people who haven't caught it yet, are still always going to kind of be up in the air as to when are they going to catch it? Are they going to catch it? And is it going to be like a big problem? And there's teams that have already said, you know, even if it's a small, minor one, we're going to ask them to take 3 weeks to ramp back up. So you've missed, you know, a quarter of the season just in them ramping back up to come back in your lineup, not to mention what happens when they actually get back to major league pitching with no minor league season going on. Like, how are they really ramping up? Are they just jogging and like hitting in batting cages by themselves? Because that's not nearly the same.
Yeah, I gotta say, but like, first of all, that we never mean to, you know, I'm not trying to reduce like obviously a story about a global pandemic is a huge story, and I hate to like just sort of reduce it to some fantasy spin about players that are affected by, you know, the virus. It's a terrible situation, but like that's the job at some level. We you know, as long as we're going to analyze these things, we do have to take it into account. I have, sort of across the board, just knowing that these guys can't be in camp, they can't see, you know, they can't face live pitching, they can't train with teammates, any of that. I'm generally dropping these guys in the ranks, I'm not taking them off the board entirely, but I am dropping them. It might have been a little bit more severe drop with Freddie Freeman because, as you say, seems like a pretty significant case from which he may not be returning immediately, right? We're not just waiting for Freddie Freeman to get a couple of negative tests and then he's good to go, and we think it's going to be a week or so. Like, it does seem a little bit more serious with him, so you really hope that he's feeling well soon. That's been a difficult situation, you know, from a projection standpoint. I don't know if you handle the projections or if that's entirely Gray's domain at Razzball. It's probably a Gray Rudy thing to do. I assume it's a Rudy thing to do because he nails stuff like that.
Rudy has the base projections. Gray takes Rudy's projections and then makes them his own, because obviously Gray has very strong thoughts on things and kind of does what he wants. I have my own projections, but they're based off of, you know, Rudy's as well as a few others, and then I do my own adjustments.
Some would just call Gray an unrestrained tyrant.
Yes,
I wouldn't go that far
because you know, there's obligations. I want food tonight. I want the scraps off of Gray's dinner table to make sure that I get something. So I can't go out on the limb and say all of that, but that's kind of their domain. Rudy does such a good job at it. He's always at the top of every projection. You know, at the end of the year, he's always doing well in his league. So we just kind of take a lot of what he does in stride, I think, at Razzball and go with that, especially since we have kind of a moving target here of games. You know, when it was like, it might be 100, I kind of adjusted down there. And then I really haven't done the full 60 game projection for my own, kind of looking at Rudy's and then just deciding where I differ. I kind of have an idea at this point who we differ on, just from a standpoint of their talent and what they're going to produce on the field. So I can just kind of move that over into his 60 game projection, and in the draft room, you kind of have to be free flowing sometimes too.
As I was saying about Trout, he is really hard for me. Mike Trout in any given year, not really a rankings conundrum at all, right? He's, as you say, he's one or two, and if you're going to go any lower than two, you've really got to state the case for it. I've got him at 8 right now, and I'm not even sure how to read this situation, right? Because at some point, you have to figure he's going to take, I don't know what it is. Is it 5 games? He's going to take some time off in a 60 game season because his wife is going to give birth. And 5 games in a 60 game season is obviously ridiculous, and it's going to happen in August. So like, we just know baseline that's going to happen. Pretty reasonable expectation that it becomes more than that. If they get off to a terrible start, does he check out in August, right? Like, if there's, I don't know. But my level of concern about Trout right now is, it's been like dominating my morning. I've been trying to decide what to do with it. And it's probably one of those things that I won't get back into a live draft now for a couple days. And I probably won't really have a read on what I do until I actually have like the 7th, 8th, 9th pick in a draft. I just don't know how to handle that situation. So like, have you dropped him beyond five? Have you dropped him out of, is he out of your first round right now? Or are you still holding on at like two or three?
So if you think you're concerned and like you've dropped him, like maybe I sound crazy at this point, but I've dropped him to the end of the second round, early third.
Okay.
That's kind of where I am on him. Cause he's even said at this point, depending on what continues to develop around the league, he may only play home games. He may not play at all because it's only going to be a month into the season when his kid is due. So is that month of playing and being out there worth his child, worth, I mean, obviously it's a bunch of money, but he has a bunch of money coming. It's not like the Angels are going to cut him because he doesn't show up and, you know, avoid some statute in his contract. That's just not going to happen. Somebody will be there to scoop him up in a heartbeat. So specifically on Mike Trout, I've dropped him, like I said, to the end of the second round for 12 team purposes. So he's around like 20 to 26 to me, kind of depending on the format. I'm still willing to kind of reach for him a little bit in points or OBP where he kind of gets that boost. But I kind of was already concerned that the stolen bases weren't going to be there as we've seen.
Sure.
Mike Trout, I mean, we've seen the numbers come down season after season for a few seasons now. So he was already kind of starting to worry me there. I mean, as you mentioned, he was like two or three, just depending on the day for me, depending on what news we had on Christian Yelich at the time. But now this has me concerned for what we get from him this year.
Yeah. Okay. That's a little more aggressive than I was. I mean, I feel like at some point, back end of the first round, middle of the first round, I'm going to start thinking about it. Cause obviously your ceiling with Mike Trout, in any given year is a triple crown in a ridiculous season like this. Like he just doesn't have like bad stretches. Like Mike Trout just doesn't have like a down 2 weeks. So I feel pretty confident about, that's a stupid thing to say. Everybody feels confident about Mike Trout when he's playing. You're kind of convincing me of the downside though.
You're missing on, like, what's the difference in 60 games between him and Trevor Story, him, Mookie Betts, him. And I mean, even if we go to like the third, fourth round, like what's the difference between him and Ozzie Albies or Javier Baez in a 60 game sample, other than like the fact that they could blow up and hit 200 in a month or two, whereas Trout probably isn't going to hit worse than 260 across the month. And if he does that, he's got like a 400 OBP and he's getting new runs, RBIs, and he probably steals in that time period because he feels bad about not hitting.
Yeah.
So like you could see
I'll often take like a football mindset to baseball ranks, which is totally the wrong way to do it, right? Like in football it's just super easy to say, well, who has the, you know, at every given moment you should be thinking about the ceiling of a player. Yeah. And but like if things go right, what does this look like? And it, for Mike Trout, it looks better than anybody else maybe in the history of the game, but certainly anybody else right now. But that football mindset is not necessarily the way to approach a baseball draft when there's such a glaringly obvious chance that Mike Trout is going to miss a prolonged period of time. I guess my big worry with him really is the Angels, like if the Angels start slow and then Trout leaves for the birth of his child, well, like why would he come back? Why on earth would you risk Mike Trout? Why would he risk it?
Yeah, I'm actually more on the edge of if you're drafting Mike Trout, which is kind of why I'm thinking he's even pushed back to the second round at this point. I'm even considering dropping further. I don't really expect him to come back after. Like once he's held his kid, once his wife has dug in on him, like our child is just born and you're going to go out and, you know, play baseball when we don't really need the money, especially if the Angels aren't in it. Like I think you hit it right there. Like if they're 500 at that point, when he's ready to come back, is that worth him coming back? I don't know, because it's still going to be such just a crapshoot in the playoffs, even more so probably.
For sure.
We may even get shortened playoffs after we start getting more and more cases. Like a shortened season may happen, and we may get shortened playoffs. We know we're getting playoffs because that's what the owners want. Like they're not going to let them
that
off
is,
the
like,
season.
That's literally the only thing the owners want.
So if we have to get playoffs the entire regular in August,
season, yeah,
like that'll happen. If we have to start them in August when Mike Trout leaves to go have his kid, like that's what'll happen. I have a fair amount of concern. At some point, you're right. The upside is just too much to pass up. But once we get, it's basically once we get past those like power speed combo guys that can give you similar numbers to what we're getting from Trout, because you don't get the prolonged bouts of average and high R runs and RBI numbers that you would normally get out of Trout because he's amazing.
Yeah, right, right. I've got him behind guys like Trevor Story right now. Again, I've got him about eight. I've got him behind Cole. I've got him behind Betts, guys like that. But once we get into those sort of second and third tier middle infield types, the types you were mentioning, I think I would pull the trigger on Trout before I'm grabbing.
Like Tatis, Albies. I think is my line. Like if Tatis is gone, I'm probably fair. Committed to go there. Maybe if Jose Ramirez is sitting around, but he's had terrible halves. Like that is hanging over Jose Ramirez in a 60 game sample. He may hit 150.
You know, that's a really interesting name. That's such a fun player, because when he's bad, he's so bad.
Oh, it's awful. He's like if you love to gamble and that's what you want to do and you're just all upside, he's your guy for this 60 game sample. Cause he could hit 400. He could be that guy, but man, he could tank you real fast.
Yeah. It's nothing for him to hit like 190 over a period of weeks. Yeah, for sure. Let's switch a little bit to talk about this season from a commissioner's perspective, because I feel like right now we have a lot of leagues deciding, because I know this because I'm a part of, like, I don't know, it feels like a half dozen different message threads where we're debating, do we redraft the league? Do we... Do we keep the league and add a new league? Like, how do we handle this? A whole bunch of commissioners are struggling with what to do on dynasty fronts, things like that. So I can tell people really quickly that Yahoo has published some of the steps that we've taken for default leagues and pro leagues. You guys, that is plastered all over the site. You should have no difficulty finding it. I think some of the things that commissioners need to do if they're starting leagues right now is add additional IL spots. Yahoo has certainly done that. I've also published a piece that sort of detailed the things that I would do if I were creating a league for a 60 game season. But I don't know. What are some of your thoughts on this? Are you like, do you personally commish many leagues? And if you do, how are you guys handling this?
I do. I have a number of leagues for the podcast, and then just some home leagues and things that I've started up over the years that I'm in charge of. And I'll say for the dynasty leagues, what we're going to do, and we are generally asking the leagues what they think that we should do, giving them what our suggestion is, seeing if anybody disagrees and kind of taking it from there. For dynasty purposes, we're taking what our minimums and maximums were and going about, I would say, 85% of whatever the prorated amount is. So we're not asking you to do 100% of the prorating, because pitchers are going to have to ramp up. We're going to lose guys, especially in dynasty. You don't want teams just having to drop like quality pitchers because they're trying to go for it and hit an innings cap. It's different in a full season if they've just gone, you know, relievers all year. That's their own fault. If they have half their pitching staff come down with COVID, like, they have to go pick up people. And at some point, you have to stop giving IL spots, I feel like, even with COVID. I agree we should expand them. And maybe there is kind of an unlimited COVID spot for dynasty purposes. But even that's kind of a slippery slope, because then people start abusing that. Like, they leave them in there and then they come back. And then they're probably staying down there because you got to see what happens. And we don't know. And so all of a sudden, some team has, you know, 10 players on their COVID list, or... you know, you get that active team who's like, okay, well, I'm just going to pick up people who hit the COVID list and throw them on my COVID list. And we're just going to stack everybody for next year. So I feel like it could be unlimited with certain checks, like the free agent pickup. Like, if you want to pick somebody up, they have to go to your roster and then they can go to your COVID list. But that means you have to drop somebody from your roster that you value back out into the free agent pool, at least.
I kind of hear you on the unlimited IL spots. I'm like, Tout Wars always plays with unlimited IL spots, and it's, you know, it ends up being okay when we have really super deep pools. I like limits everywhere. I kind of understand that. So all your dynasty leagues are still going forward and playing in 2020.
We are. I'm thinking I'm probably personally going to refund a little bit of money just so that good spirits going forward. Nobody feels like I've donated money into a season that doesn't count. But at the same time, there are people who have been building for this season to compete in this particular season. And I don't want them to go without taking some kind of prize home either. So whether it's free entry into one of my leagues next year or some kind of other bonus for everybody, I'm probably going to do something like that for my teams. I already have a league where I fund the entire thing. So it may just be free entry into that league for a lot of those teams that aren't really running for it this season. Beyond that, I think for redraft, if it involves serious money, I think you need to redraft it. If you drafted before there was even an intention of having a shortened season, I think it needs to be redrafted. We were doing like $10 best balls during the quarantine, just to kind of keep everybody busy, have something to do, kind of take your mind off it. We're not redrafting those. Those are $10 best balls. They were drafted under the idea that it would be shortened. We had a lot more games in mind, as did pretty much all the players and everybody except for owners. But that's what we're doing with those $10, $20 leagues. We're just playing those out as is. I think we only had one or two that drafted pre-quarantine. So those we're probably going to redraft. And just if they want to be in it, they can. If not, that's fine. You can take your money and go, and we'll see if we can find somebody to take your place.
Yeah, I feel a bit the same way. Most of, you know, I am not involved in very many leagues other than dynasty leagues where I actually had a roster before maybe mid-March, when all of this became suddenly very serious for everyone and sports were canceling. And we had a notion that that there would be a few more problems with this than perhaps previously anticipated. So most of my leagues have drafted like since mid-March, and none of those are canceling. Obviously, this is, if not the worst case scenario, it's pretty close to it. A 60 game season is not anything that anybody wanted or expected. But they're still going forward. My dynasty leagues, I have a couple that the commissioners want to shut down, which I get. Like I fully get, you have salary increases, you have all kinds of things going on. You've built your roster, say, for 2020, 2021, and then to have those seasons arrive, and it's an absolute crapshoot to, you know, I get wanting to shutter your season. I guess I would lean more in the camp of, you know, whatever your normal salary increases are in a given year, like suspend them for a season. Play this one out. Everybody kind of knows that there's going to be an asterisk attached to this season, both in reality and in fantasy, right? Like your 2020 fantasy title is going to be fun. Like there's a whole bunch of things that are going to make this fun and crazy as long as we get the full season. But it's a, you know, 60 games, right? It's a little bit of a, it's like, I don't know, the mini golf versus professional. I don't know. I'm not a golfer. I shouldn't be making golf analogies at all. But that's kind of the way it feels to me, right? It's like the Pro Bowl skills challenge versus the Super Bowl sort of thing.
Yeah, it's like play to go golf. I mean, it's like being in a scramble where you're counting on to hit one out of four, maybe, versus having to actually post your own score and have to do everything yourself.
That's the analogy. That's the golf analogy I should have gone with. Yeah, that's okay.
That's all I do. That's all I've done in quarantine is play golf. So if it's golf related, my mind can go there immediately.
Yeah. So I kind of like that, but I hate to, like, my personal feeling is that all of my dynasty leagues are my favorite leagues, like by a lot. And I hate to see them shudder. There's a lot of reasons to be worried about the world right now, and that would be a great distraction. So I hate to see them close down. So commissioners, my personal feeling, again, just put the increases on hold. Put that, you know, if you have rules where guys get slotted into a higher draft round the next season, put that on hold. Just play this one out. You can reduce the buy-in. There's a lot of things that you can do to reflect the fact this is not a normal season. But man, I hate to put leagues on hold. Another thing you mentioned about leagues that are simply redrafting. I hate to give too much credit to Jake Seeley because we disagree on a lot of subjects, but Jake had a really good idea outlined in a piece that he wrote for The Athletic about even if you're going to redraft a league, allowing people to keep, I think his number was 5. It could be as many as 10. Allow treat it like a keeper league and allow people to like keep 5 players from a roster that you might have drafted in early March before all this madness started, and redraft it from there. That to me seems to balance, you know, like you want to be fair to people who actually crush their draft, even if there was a lot of luck involved. And even if they, you know, obviously nobody saw anything coming like this with Blackman, with Freeman, with all these other players. But you still want to reward people who crush their draft really early in the process. So I kind of like that notion where I can just keep, I don't know, even in a redraft league, I can still keep seven of the guys that I drafted back in March.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel conflicted on that one, because on one side, you're right. Like, you should be rewarded for drafting well at the time. But I also feel like if you're going to keep them, maybe it should be like, I don't know if it should be by round or as your first five, because that kind of throws everything off. Because you probably should be rewarded for drafting, you know, somebody that is got drafted, you know, six rounds earlier, later in draft season. But I don't know that you want the team that drafted Mike Trout to be out Mike Trout because they had the first pick overall or the second pick overall.
To your point, it gets thorny on guys that were injured at the start of the season, and so they dropped in the ranks.
I kind of like the full redraft on it, but I can see where you're coming from in the reward. I will say for head-to-head leagues, what I'm trying to push on, anything that I don't run, but any of my head-to-head leagues are going to run all play, all season. We're not going to do playoffs. We're just going to do all play. The best team is going to take the money down, the trophy, and that's how we're going to handle head-to-head. Rather than trying to figure out how many rounds of regular seasons and playoffs. I know Yahoo is doing something different than that. They're doing an abbreviated, you know, season and then playoffs with less teams than, you know, single rounds. And I think if you're going to do playoffs, that's the way to do it, because you need it. You need as much season, I think, as you can get to determine the best four teams.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up head-to-head, because it's my it is absolutely my favorite format. I get a lot of pushback from people on that, but any sort of head-to-head to me is generally preferable to Roto. Like, I just like the idea that it sort of tracks the way every major North American sport goes, where it's not enough to just have been great at some point in the regular season. You have to be great throughout the regular season. And then we all agree that there's going to be this one, sports rules are arbitrary, but we do all agree that there's going to be this point in the year when we have to be at our best, right? Like, that is what makes sports really hard in a
regular
team building perspective.
Postseason.
Yes. Yeah. So I just find head to head really rewarding. I will say, like, I understand the resolution where, you know, we're going to do it as an all player. There's going to be double headers, triple headers each week. Like, I get it. One of my other favorite things about head to head is actually matching my roster. Like, I'm in a couple of leagues that are head to head. We have deep benches, and you can match your roster a little bit to your opponent. I love that.
Yeah.
I love the sort of Sunday night, you know, just like, okay, it's pretty late. His roster is probably set. I think this is what it's going to look like. He's only got one closer. I don't need to start more than two. You know, it's dumb. It's not hard, but like, I like that little element of strategy to it. So I'm not as big on playing in a head to head to head to head to head to head. Right. Like, that's not totally doing it for me, but I will say in this season, you know, I find head to head almost unplayable. Like, unless you can find a resolution where you're just going like three or four games at a time and you can still build out something close to a full season. The idea that you would launch a head to head league in which you don't play everybody, to me, is just, you know, we're gonna have seven regular season weeks in a 12 team or a 14 team league, and I'm not going to play everybody, and we're going to decide a playoff bracket out of that. I can't go there. So, like, if ever there's a season that you can lure me into a Roto league, this is the one. Not normally my favorite format, but I get it. The other thing that I would recommend to people, in a year where there's just like, there's going to be an asterisk, it doesn't like, it's a 60 game season, there's going to be an asterisk, try some stuff. We offer a ton of custom scoring categories at Yahoo. Most sites do. I think we have 80, I don't know if we have 87, 88, something like that. There's a lot. People only play 10. Like 99% of leagues only play 10 of the available, of the many available categories. So like, if you guys ever wanted to mess around with, you know, some of the stats that are particularly meaningful in real life, that like, I kind of feel like the original Rotisserie founders, had they had the full menu of stats available to them in newspaper box scores every day, they probably wouldn't have gone with the original categories they did, right? Like maybe try out a league with K to walk ratio, maybe try out a league with OPS, try out a league with like holds plus saves or net steals or inherited runners scored or like all kinds of like all the crazy stuff that are commonly offered now at most fantasy sites. I would really urge people to try that as well.
Net steals is going to be absolutely insane.
Like, yes,
net
steals
is going to be so hard to win this year. It's going to be ridiculous. Going back to the all play, one thing that I kind of took from football, it's something that I've done before on football leagues, but I don't currently have one, is you have all play, but you also have an individual matchup that gets weighted. So say you get 5 points for your individual matchup.
Oh, and then like
you get
it.
The points based on where you finish in the all play. So you get that one-on-one feel, but at the same time, you're also chasing down, you know, an overall. So you kind of can pick and choose. If this week I can't really go for the overall, I need to win my matchup, or vice versa. And you kind of make those decisions. But you hit home.
Yeah, I like that because I got to have like my one guy that I can ship off to. I just,
that's what head to head is.
I got the
about,
one matchup
right?
that I'm focused on.
Without talking it's kind of gone. Like the head-to-head feels a little bit gone. I will say you kind of hit home on the unique categories. I love doing unique category leagues or weird point leagues. I have one that does game score, total bases instead of home runs, runs created and runs produced instead of runs in RBI. Different weightings on different categories. So, you know, rather than having average it on base, be 1 point towards each and then have that add up to like 25 categories, they're a half point each. So you're chasing like an average OBP combination to get you 1 point. But yeah, go out there and have some fun.
Does Razzball still host leagues for readers? Man, I'm going
Razzball
back now a few years.
Leagues, the RCLs.
Well, the leagues where I played in a handful of points leagues that were set up, I believe, by Gray years ago, where the real object was, I don't think I'm making this up. I'm pretty sure it was Gray. It was such a good idea. Maybe I shouldn't attribute a good idea to Gray. I don't know. but the notion was you wanted to draft as many players who were going to get a ton of playing time and be terrible. Like it was a points league where like the idea was to lock in on the guys like the Tony Womack of the world who were just going to make so many outs and they were going to and you couldn't get them out of the lineup. And it was like in a lot of, I mean, cause we don't think that way, right? Like it was hard to draft those things. It was hard to find the guys who could possibly get you 500 plate appearances at like a 290 OBP and the pitchers who were going to like the Levon Hernandez types who were going to give you like 240 innings and they were going to be junk, you know, like, oh man, those leagues were so fun.
No, I don't think you're crazy. Once you guys start talking about it, I believe it was Gray used to run them. I don't know if he made Rudy do all the math and get him set up, but Gray was in charge of them, I would say.
Oh man, if there was ever a season to bring that back, this is the one. Like that was such a fun format.
That would be a really fun way to play this one out.
It's such a strange way to root for players too. Like, you know, to like be watching a game live and just know that you need a guy to, you know, go 0-for-5.
Please
today,
put Randy Wolf in the game. Please put Randy Wolf in the game.
Yes, it was exactly like that. It was, oh God, that name is a really good pull too. Yeah. Perfect player for that format. Anyway, well, since we're on the subject of Randy Wolf, let's talk a little bit about, how you are approaching pitching this year, because like I've tried to go through projections for a 60 game season, and I give every pitcher like 6 wins. I give like like all the aces, like when you really run your own numbers, all the aces, like the absolute aces, guys you would expect to contend for Cy Young awards, they get like 5 to 7 wins, and it's just really unsatisfying. Am I crazy to toy with the notion of like, First of all, I think it's possible that we see some rogue middle reliever, long reliever type actually lead the league in wins this season. Like, I think that's kind of in play. Craig Stamen finishing with 9 wins and it blows everybody else out of the water. Like, that to me seems plausible. We know that a bunch of teams are going to, you know, guys have a really abbreviated buildup this year. And so we're going to see a bunch of teams go with, you know, 3-4 inning outings to begin the year. We're going to see some 6-man rotations. There's just not going to be a lot of wins out there from the guys that you expect them. It doesn't mean you have to scrap the category, by the way. Like, going back to the commissioner settings discussion, it doesn't mean you have to scrap the category. I think wins are going to be really fun to chase this year. We're just going to be finding them in weird places. So how the hell do you approach this? Like, I'm thinking, I have this notion that I'm going to try to draft some teams where it's just all relief pitchers, and I'm going to find some, you know, some solid middle reliever types who have starting pitcher eligibility. I'm going to stick them in those slots, and it's just going to be nothing but relief, and I'm just going to pass on all the starters.
Yeah, I had that same thought, and then I got into a couple of drafts, and it's just so hard to pass up on, I guess, what is now perceived pitcher value, because we've been staring at pitchers, and this was the year that people were starting to accept, like, we got to go pitching a little early. We have to lock in some of that 1-2-3 at least, and have that before we go and say there's depth for the rest of it. And now we've gone complete 180, and I'm with you that pitching is devalued. I do want somebody that I consider somewhat safe, generally a veteran, somebody who I think kind of can ramp up in a shorter amount of time, and that specifically will have the leeway with his manager to say, I'm throwing 5 or 6 innings. Don't come get me after 3, because I'm going to tell you to turn around and go back to the mound or go back to the dugout. Like, I like Max Scherzer a little bit more, even with kind of the injury that is there, because he's that guy. Like, he's not going to let you come out in 3 innings and tell him he's done after he's ramped up for the season. Everybody's going to be on the same restrictions to start the season, I'm guessing, because they're all under the same, you know, spring training or just ramp up restrictions. But once they get going, I think some will stay on that 3-4 inning and some will move on to their normal 5-6 beyond type of work. And so I want to get at least one of those guys. And then I'm reaching for Josh Hader.
Yeah. Josh Hader could be like a top 5 overall pitcher.
He could easily do it. He could be. And so if I have to reach in the 4th, 5th round for him, I'm doing it. I've seen some people on Twitter claim that he's their new number 1 pitcher. I'm not going to go that far, but I do think he's worth reaching for. And he could potentially be the first pitcher you take in a draft and then wait and take yourself like a Jose Berríos or somebody later that still can give you some solid innings, because you don't need that many innings. You just need people. But with the less innings from the relievers, that also brings you into the blowups. So, I mean, you have to balance all of that. But with the pitch, with the starters going less innings too, that kind of evens itself out somewhat, I feel like, because everybody's going to get in the same situations, basically, and relievers are more used to it. If there's teams that are doing the, like, first starter, second starter, I feel a lot more comfortable with the first starter. If we know who that's going to be on the day, I will say that for head-to-head leagues or DFS or whatever you're doing that has any kind of daily decisions, I like the first starter more than the second, because they get to go through their normal warm-up, whereas the second starter is usually a starter that has to then figure it out based off of, like, we think this guy's going to go 2 innings and then you need to come in, or 3 innings and then you're coming in.
Yeah, it's a good point. It's a good point. So, like, average league, if you're, you know, let's say you've got $100 buy-in, so there's real money at stake, your general strategy is not going to be to go with the crazy reliever thing, right?
Not completely. Like I said, I want 1, maybe 2 pitchers. And I found that there's an end, even harder stop than there was before, where people will stop taking pitchers. So if you kind of avoid it, you can still come back later and get somebody that maybe would have gone in like round 6-7 before in round 10 or 11, because they've been pushed down. You can get like a Zach Gallen, you can get a James Paxton who should be back from his injury now. You can get those type of guys later.
Is it too much to ask Paxton to be healthy for 60 days?
Come on, you can do it. Like, we're not even asking for him to reach a new number. Like, he's hit this number of starts before.
Yeah, so that is probably, as I'm thinking it through, probably the biggest problem for me with the notion of drafting like an all reliever team, which I'm still probably going to do somewhere, is that I'm going to feel terrible about it if I don't get Hader. Like, yeah. I'm probably going to have to take him in like the third round.
You
or
start wondering
like
how early do I really need to take him? Because everybody's in the same, maybe not all in the same mindset, but I feel like Hader was already a fifth or sixth rounder pre all of this, and so. If everybody's moving him up, yeah. where's the safe spot to say, okay, I'll take him in the third, and he'll always be there.
Or yeah, that's the thing. If you're building this way, you absolutely have to you have to prioritize correctly, and you've probably got to take him in the third. So maybe that blows it up to a certain extent. I need to brand this thing. I need to come up with an acronym. I'll use Pomerantz as the acronym, and I'll just try to fill it in from there. Like, that's the type of guy that I'm thinking of, right? The
just
reliever
palm pitchers on the mound.
Yeah, I like it. That's good. I think most leagues I'm probably still gonna try to build around an ace, and then maybe something close to an ace, and then I'm gonna sketch it in with relief pitchers, but at least a handful. I don't know because I feel like
it's
if too I
fun not to try
relievers,
right?
Yeah, like, when are you ever going to do this again? If I'm ever, and the one thing that makes it more palatable to me this year is that I feel like you can still compete in wins. Normally you'd be punting two categories to do this, and you'd be counting on the idea that you're going to win ERA and WHIP, and obviously you're going to take saves, but then you're finishing dead last in two others, and it's pretty hard to win a league in which you're giving away two categories. But I feel like I can still be competitive in wins in this total crapshoot season if I do that. Plus, if you do this right, and you build a nice base in terms of your pitching ratios, you can pivot off of this later in the season, kind of churn and burn a little bit, and it's not gonna negatively affect you so much. So, thinking I'm gonna do at least one league that way.
Yeah, I like it. And this is the year to experiment. I mean, nobody knows exactly what's going to happen. We don't know who's going to get hurt. I will say that, or not even hurt, who's going to catch it, plus the injury. So we're adding on all sorts of unknowns. I will say, as I'm drafting, I'm trying to spread it out a little bit more. I generally follow the same. Like, if a guy falls to the sixth round and I like him in the sixth round, I'll take him every sixth round. Now I'm trying to spread it around a little bit more, because I don't want all 10 of my teams that I draft from this point on to be down the crapshoot because I lose my number one hitter, my number one pitcher, and I'm done for the year.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I don't normally like to be the, I'm totally willing to be a jerk, but I don't like to be the jerk who talks about it as if it's like a, financial portfolio or something like that. But man, that is a thought this year, because I'll cross promote a podcast that we just did for the Yahoo Football podcast, where we talked to Dr. Greg Horner, Dr. Sarah Edwards about what exactly this season is going to be like across multiple sports. And but one of the things that we discussed is all of the usual injuries don't go away. Like, all the usual injuries are there. Yeah. Like, all these obliques are still going to get strained, and all the hamstrings are going to get torn, and like, all the bad stuff still happens, and then we have a pandemic on top of it. So I'm sure you're right. If you're going to get yourself in 10 leagues, 15 leagues or something like that, there's no way that I'm going to want to pound the same crew of guys in all of them.
Probably more injuries, because they're not having the time to ramp up and get, especially in football where there's contact. Like, you're not going to get the same contact pre that first regular season game that we.
Yeah, well,
before.
that was actually the original motivation for the podcast that we did with those guys, is that I won't make this too much of a football pod here, but in the 2011 lockout, as soon as players returned after, many of them not having their normal off season, obviously, perhaps not taking their training as diligently during a lockout as they normally would have, we had like literally a full season's worth of torn Achilles in the first 3 weeks of training camp. And that was, it reached the point that medical journals were writing about what the hell is going on in the NFL, right? So we have to worry about that to a certain extent across all sports. Like, these guys have just not had their normal training buildups, and what you experience as a recreational athlete is not what they experience as a world-class athlete, right? And so it's a legit worry that we're going to have higher than expected injury rates for sure.
Oh yeah. I can pull my back just going out and playing golf. So, I mean, I'm not getting hit by anybody.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, I'll have to go back and listen to that because I'm curious what they had to say.
Yeah, they were. I will say they didn't leave me feeling with a totally rosy impression about where sports are headed in the next 6 months. But it was really good information. Good to talk to him. I wanna close this thing. I know you guys are used to closing with a draft on the Yahoo Football podcast, or on the Yahoo Baseball podcast. But I wanted to run through some bold predictions. We don't have to do a ton, but really, I'm doing this because I have one bold prediction in mind that I just wanted to throw out there. But we're going to alternate bold predictions. You're our guest. I'm going to start with you. And I just want like a nutty prediction for 2020, which, again, nobody's going to hold it against you if you're wrong, because this is an insane season that arguably shouldn't even be played. And we're doing it. And like some crazy stuff is going to happen. Brandon, give me your first bold prediction for 2020.
All right. I already gave a hint a little bit earlier. There will be a very good baseball player that we see hit sub 200, and we will see a 400 hitter this season. First time since 1941, I believe. So that's my first crazy prediction.
One of my favorite bits of baseball trivia. Well, I'll back up a little bit. A week or so ago, I went down a rabbit hole of looking at 60 game samples from a bunch of, because like you know, it's fun to just sort of look back. Okay, this season is really going to be 2 months. What are some of the most insane things that have happened in baseball history over 60 game periods? And I was just sort of looking at great seasons from my lifetime. And I think most people know George Brett, 1980, made a serious hardcore run at 400. Right, he hit 390 for the season. He had a lot of things worked in his favor, in that he didn't actually play a full 162. He had some injuries in there. He got scorching hot for a while. He had a 60 game stretch, and I think you could actually extend it to like 65 games, in which he hit 469. On base percentage was like 520, something like that. Like insane. Not like just a little bit over 400, but he was closer to challenging 500 than he was to 400. So we don't necessarily have a hitter like that in today's game, right? Like I wish we did. Another fun bit of trivia is that if you use multiple seasons, you can put together 162 game stretches in which both Wade Boggs and Tony Gwynn did hit 400. So like, I wish we had guys like that today. We don't. We have everybody trying to basically do the same thing. So I feel like I'm not going to go quite as bold, but I want to throw out there the idea that Howie Kendrick is finally going to get the batting title that I predicted for him.
He's gonna hit
10 years ago, 12 years ago. He's my guy. Like, he's my one guy. Like, somebody gets scorching hot for a month and makes just a stupid run at 400. I feel like it's Howie Kendrick. He wins the batting crown across all of baseball. I'm going to say he hits 370. I'm going to say this is Howie's year. Like, a lot of things are aligning for Howie. He doesn't have to go a full 162. obviously we get the universal DH. That's going to help Howie in no small way. Little changes to his approach as a hitter, right? The walk rate has really climbed in the last couple seasons. He used to be entirely unwilling to take a walk, not really bothered at all swinging outside the zone. That's changed a little bit for Kendrick. Obviously, he's coming off a great postseason and a great season overall. So I feel like Howie Kendrick can win the batting title that I probably first predicted 12 years ago.
That sounds a lot like my Starlin Castro prediction when he first came up that I made. And actually very similar type of hitters early in their career too, because Castro doesn't walk. He's up there to swing. He wants to hit the ball. So yeah, I made a very similar prediction about Starlin Castro. So maybe I could take that and steal that from you. I actually had Javi Baez as a potential MVP candidate in this shortened season.
Oh, just 'cause
I feel
it.
Like this is built for him. Like a sprint to the finish in baseball, like Javi Baez just seems like the guy that's going to take that and run with it. And maybe a World Series for the Cubs, but I also feel like the Rays make it to the ALCS.
Oh, I like that. I like that a lot.
They have a great pitching staff. None of them go too deep, but they have a ton of arms. And I mean, we know what they can do platoon wise.
One thing we haven't talked about a great deal, and I'm gonna I'm going to sort of double down on your Cubs bold prediction by saying that this is the year that I'm basically using this segment to dredge up a bunch of old predictions that I made and say, this is the year it comes true. So not only is this the year that I'm finally right about Howie Kendrick after a decade of trying, this is the year that I'm right about Kyle Schwarber as well. Kyle Schwarber is going to be your National League home run champ. I love that, and this is true of a bunch of teams. We haven't really talked about park factors at all here. Like, if I just get the warm weather months of Wrigley, this is going to be a hitters. But like, Wrigley is one of those weird parks that is actually two very different parks, right? Cold weather, wind blowing in. It's an awesome pitcher's environment, and once we get up to 90 degrees. It is just a great place to hit, almost regardless of the wind. So getting only the warm weather months, for that team, I think it's going to make a huge difference in Coors. It's going to make a huge difference at Wrigley too. I expect Wrigley to play as a strongly, hitter friendly park. I think Schwarber's going to have a hell of a year. Arguably some strides against left-handed pitching last year. It's not like he was dynamite against left-handed pitching, but he was playable against left-handed pitching, which is not actually something that he struggled with in the minors at all. So I feel like he can get there. And he's just exactly the sort of player who could really, he only needs to binge for like 4 weeks, 6 weeks. I think he can get this done. I feel like Kyle Schwarber's got like a 14 homer month in him.
Yeah, and we promise this isn't the Cubs podcast. You have to tune into the Yahoo Baseball podcast. So, you know, don't leave yet.
People expect that to a certain extent when I'm on anyway. They know they're going
to
get some Cubs.
He also improved his K rate to a point he's never shown before. So on top of all of that, he improved his K rate. It was down to – it was below 22% for the first time he's ever shown that across any half. Like, he's had hot halves before, but he actually showed something he's never shown before in that second half. So I'm with you on Kyle Schwarber. I was kind of all in whether the season was 60 games or 162, but yeah, definitely shoving all in on 60 games. You're right. He's the type of player that you're looking for in those middle rounds. You want people who make the difference. Shoot for the upside, because you're just going to find players left and right, because people are going to fall. We're going to have to replace tons of people. So just grab those guys that can make the difference.
I'm going to throw one more bold prediction out there, because it pairs nicely with my potentially ridiculous relief pitcher team build. And that is, I think we're going to see relief pitchers win both Cy Youngs this year. I'm going to be really surprised. Like, whatever. Some starter is going to have a dominant year. We could just as easily have a sort of season like. Yeah. It could be like Nolan Ryan in 1981 had like a 1 point something low ERA. It was stupid. We'll probably see something like that. But I feel like these guys are going to be piling up saves while, you know, your starting pitcher who leads the league and wins is going to have like seven. And the numbers just aren't going to jump off the page. If ever there was a season for relief pitchers to dominate the Cy Young voting, I think this is the one.
Yeah, especially, I mean, if Josh Hader doesn't win the NL Cy Young, I assume he got hurt or caught COVID, because he's going to have as many innings as most starters do, other than like the Scherzers of the world. Like, he's going to be up there with every other starter, because he throws 2-3 innings every time, and that's all starters are going to do. And he does it 2-3 times a week, whereas they do it once. They're going to do it once, maybe twice, but even that's going to be few and far between this year, probably.
Yeah, I should make Hater the acronym when I try to brand this thing. That's what I'm going to do. It's definitely going to be Hater. That's a good call. All right, that's going to do it for us for the Yahoo Baseball podcast. Another edition of this. Look forward to Scott's imminent return. I really want to thank you for joining us, man. Thanks, Brandon, for jumping on. Again, you can follow him at RazBdon. Do it. Follow at Yahoo Fantasy as well. You can follow me at Andy Behrens. And check out some of the other podcasts in the Yahoo Podcast family. We've got the Yahoo Fantasy Football Podcast. We, of course, have the Yahoo Football Podcast with Charles Robinson, Therese Paylor. Good stuff all around. That is it for another episode. We are out.
It's no secret that our world has been interrupted. A World Interrupted is a daily podcast telling stories of coronavirus and its impact on the economy. So subscribe today on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts.